Welcome to Love at First Science, the podcast designed to dig deep into neuroscience, the human body, and anatomy. My name is Celeste. I'm a physio and I teach anatomy to yoga teachers. And this podcast is an archive of the lessons I've learned along the way in my attempt to bring a more science-based approach into the yoga world. Hey friends, thanks for tuning in. Just a quick reminder that I don't run any ads, so this podcast can only grow with your support. If you learned something new that you found useful, please do rate and review the podcast. And if you think the content can help someone get out of pain, improve their life, move without injuries, or even just feel more inspired, please share it with them. It would mean the absolute world to me. And you never know, we just might help elevate our community along the way. Today's podcast is with Mike Golden. Mike is the Director of Education for Z Health Performance Solutions, which, as all of you know, I believe is the highest form of education around the human body available today. And guys, I've done a lot of courses, so I feel like I have got some authority in saying this. Now, Mike, he's not a trained doctor, he's not even medically trained, but let me tell you, that is what makes him so brilliant, because he actually understands the human body far better than many of the medical professionals I've met. But what he does is he has this genius way of explaining really complex concepts in an easy to grasp way. Now today, I gave him the lofty task of teaching us about a very complex topic called spinal tracts. You've got the brain at the top, running through your spine is your spinal cord, and actually the spinal cord is divided into different sections, and every single section has a different job and can be impacted in different ways. Guys, it's a super deep subject. So two things: either just listen with an open mind, let the information run through you, your unconscious mind will pick up on what's necessary, or do a me, grab a pen and a notebook and get your finger ready over that pause button, because you're going to be hitting it a lot to scribble down a huge amount of information. This episode has been broken up into two parts, and this is part two. So can you just recap the fact that you just spoke about three, but you kind of mentioned a couple within those brackets? I just want to recap those. So the first, so because there were two for the vestibulospinal tract, and there were two for the rubrospinal tract.
So the first one I talked about was the corticospinal.
That's it.
And that one gets divided into two parts. There's a lateral one. Again, that's for most of your voluntary movement.
That's it.
Then the anterior corticospinal is for your midline. So that goes to your spinal muscles.
Okay, that was it. Okay.
Yep. And then, yes, the vestibulospinal, you have two of them. A medial one and a lateral one. The medial one is primarily for neck control. So when my head starts to bobble around, it corrects, it stabilizes my head on top of my neck. And then the lateral vestibulospinal goes to every other part of my body and my neck too. The rubrospinal tract, you only have one of those.
Okay.
And then the reticulospinal, you have two of those as well. You have a medial reticulospinal that comes from a part of your brainstem called the pons.
Okay.
So it's like your brainstem's typically divided into three parts. You have the midbrain at the top of it. The pons is in the middle. Pons just means bridge. It kind of acts as a bridge between the other two parts. And then at the bottom, you have your medulla or medulla. Medulla just means like deep structure. It's just the bottom most deepest part there. And so you have the medial reticulospinal coming from the pons, the middle part there. And then you have the lateral reticulospinal that comes from your medulla at the bottom there. And that lateral one is for flexor tone. The medial one coming out of the pons is for extensor tone.
Amazing. Thank you for recapping all that again, because there's so many, because basically there's categories and then there's other tracts within the categories. So I'm glad that you recapped those. There were four that you mentioned in terms of descending, right?
Yeah, so there's the corticospinal, and then there were four what are called extrapyramidal tracts, and those are the ones dealing with muscle tone. So rubrospinal, the lateral vestibulospinal, and then your medial and lateral reticulospinal. So that may usually, so with that like muscle tone stuff, you'll be talking about those four pathways primarily. And then when you're talking about the voluntary movement, you'll be talking about the corticospinal.
Okay.
So you can kind of group them as like five.
Okay, perfect. And guys, listen, I know it sounds like a lot, right? You're probably listening to all these words and thinking, Mamma Mia, how am I ever going to remember this? But the good thing is Mike's actually now going to go on to the practical part. Was there anything else you wanted to say before we go on?
So like anytime that you're learning this type of stuff, one of the things that can help you grasp the information is starting to immediately kind of theorize or take notes on what could I do with this? And so when you start hearing this information, when I say, hey, the dorsal column deals with fine touch and vibration, you might think, oh, my client does not like it when you touch them very lightly. Or my client has trouble feeling what's underneath their feet, kind of thing. If I say, hey, this track deals with temperature, you'd be like, my client is temperature intolerant. Or my client like doesn't seem to feel cold at all. They're wearing shorts and flip-flops when it's 15 degrees out. Maybe they actually have an issue with that spinothalamic track. If I say, hey, this deals with extensor tone, be like, oh, my client is super rounded all the time and is flexion all the time. So maybe I could work with this extensor tone pathway. Mm. So it's like, as soon as you start seeing that stuff, be like, oh, this is for Susie. This is for John. This is for me. That sounds just like me. You know, you try not to be one of the things with like, you always hear about med students is like, as they're learning about all these different diseases and stuff,
they
like, every one of those. Yeah. You start to see yourself in all of them kind of thing. But again, start thinking like right away, what should I do with this? And then some of them will stick out to you as being more important or more relevant to you or your clientele. And you'll know where to focus your learning energy.
Yeah.
Because you can't necessarily learn everything all at once right away. So it's like, which parts of this should I focus on? Oh, you know what? That dorsal column, that sounds like a bunch of clients. And so I'm just going to learn more about that right now and spend a couple of weeks just working on dorsal column with my clients and with my studies so I can get the information down. I can use the information, which helps me learn it. And then I'll worry about some of these other pathways a little bit later. For actual day-to-day practice, there's a number of different scenarios where this stuff can be helpful. Now, again, I'm always trying to narrow down where in your nervous system to go. And again, maybe we need to spend most of our time on your cerebellum. Maybe we need to spend most of our time on your brainstem. But these spinal cord tracks can illuminate patterns of dysfunction or maybe goals or, again, training things we need to focus on. And things like, let's say that you come to me and you do have sensory deficits. Now you're telling me, or I'm running assessments and you can't seem to feel that fine touch. You can't seem to sense vibration very well. You don't really seem to know what your joints are doing at any given time. That tells me, it screams to me, hey, dorsal column. Now, one of the ways that I could then train it is by introducing those stimuli, right? If you have trouble with fine touch, if you have trouble with vibration, I could touch you. I could vibrate you. I can move your joints and have you tell me where they are and what they're doing, what's called joint reproduction or joint position reproduction. Basically, you're imitating joint positions, things like that. But again, maybe that's not enough because the structure is unhealthy and it's not strong enough or well connected enough to actually get those signals through and make new connections and adapt. So knowing the anatomy, knowing where that stuff starts, where it lives in the cord, where it ends up, can then help me work with it. So for something like that, that information, the dorsal column information, goes up your spinal cord on the same side. So if I'm touching the right side of your body, it goes up the right side of the spinal cord to your right medulla. And in the medulla, it synapses or it connects to two different nuclei. One's for your lower body, one's for the upper body. That connection is something I can work with and I can facilitate it. I can make it easier for that information to cross that synapse and get to the rest of your brain. Because if it stops there, it's like it never happened, basically. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the anatomy of the medulla, you'll see that those two nuclei are right next to a very large structure that senses temperature and nociception from your face and your mouth. So maybe while I'm tickling your feet or while I'm vibrating your knee, we have a heat pack on your face at the same time. And by activating that very large structure that lives right next door to the that sensory information coming from your leg, then that nucleus for your leg will be easier to activate.
So guys, can I just interject real quick, Mike? Because all of us know this phrase, right? Neurons that wire together fire together. And that's basically what Mike's describing. So if you have someone who struggles with something, what you can do is actually, if you know your neuroanatomy, you can light up the part right next to it. Potentially it's bigger and a bit more dense in terms of neural tissue. And then it'll fire and light up. And because those nerves are lighting up, it'll have a positive effect on the nerves next to it, which need that upregulation.
Exactly. It's going to bring blood to that area. It's going to bring oxygen to that area. And it's going to bring physical electricity to that area. There's also some electromagnetic field, some other stuff. And then, yeah, everything around it is then that much easier to activate for a certain period of time. It's like you woke them up and say, hey, pay attention. There's stuff happening. Something might be coming your way. So I could, again, have like temperature on your face. I have a pinwheel. It's like little sharp stuff. I can kind of roll on your face too for that nociception kind of thing. There's also some stuff right there. There's nuclei for your tongue, most of the muscles that go to your tongue, and the muscles that go to your vocal cords. So maybe I have you gargling or humming or tongue exercises. Again, yeah, to help you feel something in your hand, to help you feel something in your hip. And again, that's just knowing the anatomy. That seems like completely outside the box and it seems completely random.
It works so well though, my God.
Yeah. I mean, but it's like when the brain is your box, it makes perfect sense.
Totally, because I mean, I listened to you saying, listen, if you want to learn anything well, use your tongue. And because I've always struggled with learning, ever since I heard you say that, if I'm learning something complicated, I'm like moving my tongue around in the weirdest ways ever. And my memory recall has been far better. But even weirdly, there are some positions that I struggle with, for example, balancing in a handstand. I'll just do some tongue exercises before. The ridiculous amount of stability this gives me, it's just crazy. And then everyone is obviously looking at me like I've lost it. But if it works, it works, hey?
Oh, yeah. I've gotten rid of my embarrassment a long time ago. I don't care what I look like in the gym. You know, I just care that, hey, when I'm grappling, when I'm sparring, you know, that I'm kicking your butt. Like, I don't care how silly I looked while I was warming up. I don't look silly now, do I? When I'm lifting more weight than you, when you're injured and I'm not, like, that's really 100%. All that matters to me. I will look silly to get the benefits later. Or, you know, I just make the silly stuff look cool with confidence.
Yeah, that's exactly. I think we need to normalize looking weird in the gym because all the stuff does look a little bit far out. But you know what I always think, and just a quick sidetrack, it's so normal that everyone stares at their phone all the time. And that's a vision exercise. That's a neck exercise. There's so much there's so much stuff going on. There's a vestibular thing going on there, but because it's fixed and just everyone is so used to seeing it, it becomes normal, but it's so bad for us, you know? So we need to normalize doing all the weird brain stuff, walking down the street.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why it's important too. Like I mentioned at the beginning where I was like explaining it to that client's mom, like she's a 10-year-old. Right? Because let's say you're doing some weird stuff in the gym and somebody asks you about it. For a lot of people, it really helps for them to be able to explain what they're doing. You know, it's like, why are you doing that weird thing? And they go, I really know. And then they're not going to do it because it looks weird and they can't explain why they're doing it. But if they have, again, some basic understanding of like, oh, I'm doing this because.
Yeah.
All right, go away. Let me keep doing it. And yeah, exactly. They'll be more likely to do it.
Okay, so let's get back to the tongue. You were talking about like some stuff you can do for the tongue to help people's...
So like I could use your tongue to help you feel stuff in your body because they live right next toward each other in the brainstem. You know, you mentioned your neck. If like, let's say, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners have had clients that come to them for neck pain. Extremely common. Now, one tract that I didn't mention before is called your tectospinal tract. So it's descending spinal, right? The second word there is spinal. It's going to your spinal cord from the brain. And tecto, there's a part in the midbrain, that top part of your brainstem, called the tectum. Tectum just means roof. And coming from there is a tract that goes just to your cervical spinal cord. just to your neck. And the information that it is at the root of it is from your eyes and from your ears for sound. And it's sending motor signals down to your neck based on where your eyes are moving and what you are hearing. Because it's meant to orient you. If suddenly a loud sound appears on your right side, boom, you want to, turn your head. What's over there? You see a flash of light over on the left. Oh, what was that, right? And you want to turn your head to the left. So it's what are called orienting reflexes.
Wow.
So your client comes to you and they have neck pain. Now, they could have neck pain because there's an issue with this pathway. There's constant aberrant reflexive muscle activity because of this pathway might be aberrant. Or maybe their neck hurts because they slept on it wrong. Maybe their neck hurts because they had a hard wrestling session. Doesn't matter. I can still use this tract in order to change the musculature in the neck and facilitate movement. So maybe you're trying to turn your head to the right. Right? I see you turn white. Like it hurts to turn your head right. Okay. What signal would I need to create at the beginning of this tectospinal tract to help your neck turn right automatically, reflexively, before you even have a chance to think about it? Well, if I have you saccade or snap your eyes to the right, it will help your neck move right. Go ahead and try it right now. You can kind of like go to your end range of motion for your neck, snap your eyes right, and you'll probably feel that you have additional motion there. Yeah, because that eye movement upregulated the muscle tone for right rotation. Similarly, again, it's based on sound. So I could create sounds to your right and have you orient towards it, or I could just have you I could create sounds to the right, have you point to where you think they are with your eyes closed. So you're kind of helping locate sounds. And then that should be kind of making stuff activate in your neck, even if you're not moving.
Amazing.
And then we do our neck movement practice. And I add the eyes in at the same time. If you came to me, a typical practitioner for neck pain, are they going to be giving you sounds to locate? No. Are they going to be using your eyes at all? Probably not.
Probably not.
They're going to put a heat pack on your neck and say, hey,
massage
rest it
you.
For a couple of days.
Yeah, put some needles in you.
And, yeah, maybe hands on stuff. And not that that can't work, but if you combine that with the reflexive pathways going to these neck muscles, every eye movement, you move your eyes 100,000 times a day. So maybe this path,
maybe this track might be
important. Yeah. So if you combine them together, that's even better.
It's also now, just like more holistic, right? We're actually looking at the full picture as opposed to just tiny little slither of the piece. Like what I always think is it's incredibly reductionist, the view of the body that most practitioners take, but they don't even realize that.
Yeah. So yeah, like I'm absolutely a huge fan of combining passive and active modalities together, and even combining active modalities together. The greater the intensity of activation that you can create in the brain, usually the faster and longer lasting the changes in the brain are. So anytime, like I said, it was like, okay, I could use sound, or I could use my eyes, or I could use the sound and my eyes together, because that's probably actually going to create an even stronger signal, which will create a faster result and a longer lasting result. If I can combine some kind of massage with the eye movements and the sound, even better. As long as your nervous system can handle that much activation, I'm going to put it together. Another example, like let's say, and we talked about extensor tone pathways. And so let's say that you have a client who likes to lift and they want a bigger deadlift. They want a PR, they want a personal best in the deadlift. How can you get them there? Well, if you're going to deadlift more weight than you've ever lifted before, you probably then need more extensor tone than you've ever had before. Because you need knee extension and hip extension and spinal extension and shoulder extension. All of that needs to extend. So how can we upregulate, boost those extensor pathways? Again, we gotta look at our spinal cord tracts. You have two of them that are for extensor tone, and they both come from the pons, that middle part of the brainstem. So can you activate other things that live in the pons? Yeah, you can. And in fact, you will see power lifters doing this all the time. So one of the biggest nerves in your brainstem is called the trigeminal nerve. And this actually has sensation for your tongue. That's one of the reasons why using electricity or other stuff on the tongue is so effective, is because this nerve is gigantic. But it does things in the pons like control the muscles of mastication, meaning the muscles that make you bite. If you've ever seen people doing heavy lifting, sometimes they will put a mouth guard in and bite down really hard. And some of that is for like irradiation, like muscular tension type stuff, but it's also activating an extremely large nucleus that lives next to all of your extension stuff. The trigeminal nerve is also in your nose. And so like it senses noxious stuff in your nose. So like smelling salts will activate it too. So you might also see them using smelling salts before they lift. And part of that is for sympathetic nervous system. It gets your fight or flight stuff going, but it's doing that through the trigeminal nerve. Wow. So again, maybe that's helpful.
Hey, my loves, real quick, if you are hypermobile, be sure to check out my book, Too Flexible to Feel Good, where my co-author and I share the latest science on how to help a bendy body feel awesome. If you already have the book, please do leave it an Amazon review. It helps more than you could ever know, and it just might help someone else feel a bit more stable in their bodies. The book is called Too Flexible to Feel Good, and you can get it from most online retailers.
You know, those are some examples of knowing, okay, where does this stuff begin? Where does it end? But another thing that can be relevant to you is where in the spinal cord physically does this stuff live? And so let's say that your client has balance problems. They do not balance as well as they would like. Maybe it's that they don't balance well enough to be safe. Maybe it's that they don't balance well enough to actually be strong or athletic, and you want to improve that. If we look at the spinal cord, what you will see is that those vestibulospinal tracts, again, that vestibulospinal tract is coming from your inner ear to change all of your muscle tone to help you balance. And that vestibulospinal tract lives in the very front part of your spinal cord. Remember I said like the dorsal column lives in the back. Some of these live out on the side. The vestibulospinal tracts live in the front. So maybe to help someone balance, you actually have them doing exercises that stretch the front part of the spinal cord and stretch this vestibulospinal tract, add neural tension to it. There's working with peripheral nerves, working with the spinal cord, you can actually physically manipulate them and change their function, activate them, inhibit them. Usually when you stretch them, or what's called tension them, usually it kind of wakes them up. Type of thing through those nervi nervorum, through blood flow. You kind of pump blood through it when you kind of floss them a little bit, those types of things. Again, by stretching them, you show the brain, hey, this is free to move. Like, look, my spinal cord can stretch, it can slide through these spaces, and it's fine. Go do whatever you want because your spinal cord is safe. So by stretching the front part of the cord, maybe by having people bend backwards while doing other things, you wake up that vestibulospinal tract, and now they're able to balance better because those signals are going to the body better. You do have a spinovestibular tract too that goes from your body to the vestibular nuclei directly. So, you know, that can go both ways. But that's just knowing, hey, here's where the spinal cord, like here's physically where it lives, and I'm working with the spinal cord itself in order to change your balance.
So amazing.
But again, normally if they came to you and say, hey, I have poor balance, like, you know, the traditional stuff, which is not bad, would be here's balance exercises.
Yeah, but it's just, here's, it's not effective for so many
people. Here's some unstable
stuff.
Go stand on this.
Yeah, I mean, I remember.
Which can work.
It can, but I remember, bless, working with this one guy who's like, balance was awful. And I kept telling him, you just need to practice more. And now looking back after I've done Z-Health, I'm like, oh my God, the poor guy's vestibular system was probably in pieces. And I had absolutely no clue that I could have helped him so much if I had found you guys earlier.
Because, you know, it's like, and if you have balance problems, I will probably have you doing balance exercises. Absolutely. Right? Practice makes perfect. If that practice is actually having an effect. And that's the biggest thing, is I'm not going to just have you doing balance exercises. Because even if those could work for you, you know, number one, they may not work. Number two, the change just may take too long. Like, why do I want you to do twice the amount of work that you would otherwise have to do if I can facilitate things? So maybe then I'm working with the spinal cord. I'm actually working with the vestibular nuclei. I'm working with your inner ear peripheral organs themselves. And by doing that, those balance exercises now have a much higher percentage chance of success. And even if they were going to work before, they're now going to work faster. And the changes are going to last longer, meaning you probably have to do less practice. And then over time, you have to do like less reminder practice. So it's not like I have to do 30 minutes of balance exercises every day for the rest of my life. It's, hey, maybe we can get it done in 5 minutes. And then after a couple of months, it's like, hey, you know, every like 2 weeks, maybe check in on your balance and see how it's doing. Because again, there was actually plasticity in the brain. Rather than, oh, it only works when I like give myself a daily reminder type of thing because the connections aren't lasting.
Yeah.
Type of stuff. So a lot of this is, you know, sometimes, yes, this actually is the root of your problem. Sometimes it's just, hey, I'm using the spinal cord to just make everything else that we're doing better, have an effect faster. And then the last thing that I will say about the spinal cord before I forget too, like, because a lot of your listeners may care a lot about people in pain. And if you are working with folks in pain, one of the most valuable things that you can know about the spinal cord is something called, if you want to look more into it, look into the gait control theory of pain. And these ascending tracts carry different types of information. Like I said, some of them carry information about from muscles and skin about movement and fine touch and vibration and all these types of things. You have these other pathways that carry that nociception. For your clients who are in pain, who are in pain for too long, who get in pain too easily, they are usually letting in more nociception than they should. You have functions in your nervous system that are meant to block out a certain amount of that nociception so that you can get that information about fine touch and muscular stuff. That nociception kind of blurs your maps. It's fuzzy information and it interferes with your ability to really sense what's going on in your body and what your body is doing. And then it's that nociception makes it more likely that your brain will make a decision that you should have pain right now. So if we can keep more of it out, more appropriately, the way that it's supposed to, then you're less likely to be in pain. You're more likely to have an accurate understanding of exactly what your body is doing, where it's going, and how safe or not safe anything that you're doing is. One of the things that properly filters out nociception are the functions of these spinal cord tracts. When you have information coming along those tracts that carry the info, again, about muscular contraction and joint rotations and skin touch, those fibers are very big. They're what are called large diameter. They're very thick. They send electricity very quickly, and they carry a lot of signals at one time. They will block out nociception from even going into your spinal cord.
Wow.
And so you can use movement, you can use hands-on work, you can use touch, you can use pressure, you can use muscular contraction, you can use joint movements in order to block out that nociception more appropriately so your brain can have a more accurate understanding of exactly what is going on in your body and whether pain is really necessary for you right now. And again, that's based on spinal cord anatomy. If you want to look more into it, again, gait control theory of pain, it's been updated a lot over the years, and it's one of the best things. You know, if you ever had a coach, you hurt yourself playing a sport, and they say, all right, walk it off. It's like, yeah, walking actually does block
it actually that does movement. Help.
That large diameter firing blocks out the nociception. If you bang your thumb and you start shaking it,
rubbing
or
it.
You start squeezing it, that blocks out the nociception because of how your spinal cord works. So again, that's just another useful magic thing about the spinal cord tracts and their anatomy to know, is that some of the ascending ones will block out the other ascending ones and help people get out of pain much more quickly.
Mike, thank you for being the biggest nerd I've ever met in my whole life. You're the best nerd I've ever met. It's such a pleasure learning from you.
I take that as a compliment. Your listeners can't see it, but I'm blushing right now.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I don't know. I've gone weirdly red. I can see myself on the video. I'm like, why am I so red? Very, very random question I ask all my guests at the end. I'm sure I've asked you this, if I'm not mistaken. Any one message for the world? One message, if you could give it to everybody on the earth right now, what would your message be?
My message typically to folks, and one of the things I love most about neurology and functional neurology or applied neuroscience, is that there is hope. There is so much more to our body and our brains than we realize, than we understand, that most people have been taught, that you can work with, meaning that you are capable of so much more than you know, as far as performance goes, as far as aging goes, as far as pain goes. There is so much that you can do with a person. Like, when the nervous system is your toolbox is basically endless. And
incredible.
When I'm working with someone, like, I will work tirelessly to find the solution for them. How do I make you better? How do I get you out of pain? How do I give you hope that the rest of your life won't be miserable? Whatever it might be, because I know the answer is in your nervous system somewhere. The brain controls everything that you do, and it can be changed, which means there's pretty much hope for everybody. Whatever you want to be better at, whatever you want to change, it can probably be changed, and you can probably improve. And it's just about finding which part of the nervous system to talk to.
Mike, that was your message last time. I remember
still,
it now.
It's still the same message.
Your same message to the world is just don't give up hope. And thank you for giving me so much hope. Not just in terms of learning about the body and what I can do to improve myself and the people that I work with, but also just that I can learn this stuff. You know, it's like, it really is so empowering when you are engaging with an educational system that gives you hope to know that you actually can learn very complex concepts. And guys, I know today was very deep. Don't let the depth of today maybe scare you off, because the cool thing about Z-Health is they actually build you up layer by layer, and you get so used to the terms, you get so used to practicing the information, that in the end it actually really does roll off the tongue. Even I, who dropped out of school when I was 16, I'm getting it. So Mike, thank you, because you're a part of that learning journey, so I'm very grateful to you.
Yeah, and you're welcome. And this, the education process, you know, it's meant to start and be built upon. So, you know, I've mentioned a lot of things. Some of the names, the other things that I used were so you can look that stuff up. You know, like, one of the biggest, the most useful things when you're trying to learn stuff is just knowing what to Google.
Yes.
Like, knowing the terms that you, so you can find more. If I just said, like, hey, there's a pathway for extensor tone, then you don't know where to find more information on that. But when I say medial reticulospinal, even if you don't memorize that, you now have an actual term that you can type into Google and find more information on in Physiopedia, in Wikipedia, or yes, research articles or other stuff. So by having actual specific names, you know how to find more when you're ready to find more. And do not be afraid to break things down and start with one thing at a time. Like I said, just learn something about the dorsal columns. Test it on every client you have, train it on every client you have for a couple of weeks, play with it for yourself. And then when you get comfortable with that, now let me look up the spinothalamic tracts. Okay, it's temperature and sharp stuff. Cool. Let me poke some people and put pads on them and see if that makes them better. Even if you have no idea what else you're doing with it, just be like, hey, if I touch you with cold, do you get better? If I touch you with heat, do you get better? If I touch you with something sharp, don't stab people, guys, but, like, you know, you just poke them a little bit. Do you get better? If I vibrate you, do you get better? If I touch you lightly, do you get better?
Yeah.
Right? Those are the kind of things where, even if you don't really understand the stuff super deeply, at least you know to try it and see what happens with folks.
Amen. Amen. Yeah, just, it's all about trying. Yeah, experimentation, playing, and actually building your own knowledge up bit by bit. So thank you so much, Mike, for sharing such gold with us. Your surname's Golden, so it's just like, it was meant to happen. I really appreciate your time, Mike. I'm going to end the interview with a big smile on my face. Thanks for being here.
HealthEducation.net. We have classes for people of all experience levels, education levels. And again, starts basic and goes really deep, if depending on how deep you want to go.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for being on Love at First Science.
Thanks for listening, everyone. That was part two. Next week, we'll be welcoming a new guest. Remember, if this episode was helpful at all, please do share, rate, and review.